The Golf Unfiltered podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Cog Hill Golf and Country Club. I am so excited to partner with them once again in 2022 because they've got a lot of great stuff going on, including an entirely redesigned and renovated driving range and practice area. It's got Top Tracer. It's got, what, like 42 heated bays, individually heated, by the way. And it's even got a food truck and much, much more, such as two bars. Yeah, that's right. Go out to CogHillGolf.com today to learn a little bit more. And of course, you already know about all their great golf courses. CogHillGolf.com. We're also pleased to continue to work with our friends at WorldwideGolfShops.com. You've heard me talk about them many times before. They've got everything you need for golf. They've got apparel, accessories, training aids, all the new equipment. They've got deals like every single day. And going out to WorldwideGolfShops.com might just help you improve your game this golf season. WorldwideGolfShops.com. Welcome to the Golf Unfiltered Podcast, your source for all things golf, including in-depth interviews, new equipment highlights, and answers to golf questions you might be too afraid to ask. My goal? To help you learn more about the game so you can enjoy it even more. Let's dive in.
All right. Hello, friends. Welcome to the show. And thank you for listening to Golf Unfiltered. My name is Nikki Dunnigan, and we are back for another episode of our mini series, Memoirs from Magnolia Lane. If you missed us last time, Adam is taking a break for a few episodes of Golf Unfiltered, and we are going to be focusing on the first major of the year, sharing some stories and traditions surrounding the tournament from the patron point of view. I have a very special guest with me today that I'm very excited about you meeting. This PGA professional and golf instructor has been to the Masters a whopping 13 times. He's collected 58, is that right? 58 Masters badges?
Yes.
And has over 40 autographs for Masters winners, not just players, Masters winners. Everyone meet Rick Grayson from Springfield, Missouri. Mr. Grayson, how are you today?
I'm doing great. We're counting it down, Nikki. We're less than 2 weeks away. So I know you're excited and I am too. And I look forward to talking about the Masters.
Yes, I know. We are getting close. When those temperatures start rising a little bit and the pollen comes out and my eyes start itching, then I know it's getting time.
I know it.
Yeah. And now, you know, I purposely mentioned that you were from Springfield, Missouri, not to out your location, but
That's okay.
I wanted to you to speak on that because Springfield, Missouri happens to be relevant because why? Could you happen to mention that for us?
Sure. Springfield, Missouri is relevant and it'll always be relevant in Masters history because the winner of the first and the third Masters was Horton Smith, was from Springfield, Missouri. And actually, when he won the tournament in 1934, his house is still standing here in Springfield that he lived in when he won the tournament. And I've cruised by it several times and looked at it and hoping it would bring me good luck in my golf game, but it's really not done that. But Horton Smith won the first Masters and the third. And then in 1946, Herman Kaiser won the Masters and he was from Springfield. So there was three winners, 34 Horton, 36 Horton, 46 Herman Kaiser that won the Masters those three times in the first 10 years of the tournament. So we have a rich history here. And obviously some of the listeners may know this. Springfield, Missouri is also the home of Payne Stewart that never won the Masters, but he won two U.S. Opens and a PGA championship. So we pride ourselves in having great players. There is a golf course named Horton Smith's Golf Course here in Springfield, Missouri, that Horton came. In fact, Nikki, in 2 days, it'll be the 60th anniversary of the grand opening. And Horton came in and christened the course and played a round of golf 1962 and passed away the following year. He was not in great health, but he came to Springfield and he said, of all the honors he received, this was the greatest honor to have a golf course named after him. So we're proud of that in Springfield.
Wow. To win the first ever Masters tournament and then to win all of those different tournaments and then to come back and say, hey, the greatest honor of my whole career is to have a golf course named after me. That's That's something. Now, is there someone currently living in that house, or yeah. is it set up as like a museum or?
No, it's not a museum. It is people that do currently live in the house. That's been the way Horton, when he took the job in Detroit, he kept his home here in Springfield and was just here back and forth. But there is somebody living in the house. And talking about Horton and his career, a lot of golfers don't know this. Horton Smith won more professional tournaments on the tour at the age of 25 and under than any player until a guy, you may have heard of this guy, named Tiger Woods came along. In other words, Horton had the most victories of any player under the age of 25 until Tiger Woods came in and broke that record. So that shows you what a great golfer Horton Smith was at a young age. A lot of golfers aren't aware of that.
Wow. And you know what? This is such a random fact, but speaking of young golfers, I actually saw, I think it was this morning, somebody mentioned that, you know, they announced yesterday that Phil is not going to be playing in the Masters this year for the first time since, I think it's 1994. And of the top five players in the current world rankings, only Patrick Cantlay was alive the last time Phil missed Masters, wow. which is insane to think about, you know, that the top five players in the world right now are that young. But, you know, to your point, you know, Horton Smith was that young.
Yes, so,
you know, are we seeing another push of young golfers kind of taking over the game? Is this kind of part of the grow the game mentality where the young guns are coming in and taking over again?
Absolutely it is. And what's fascinating about it is, you know, in my day in the 60s and 70s, players went out on the tour, they weren't ready to win a major championship just right out of the gate. And that's not the case today. I mean, there's handful of players that could win any event, and we may get into your pick at the Masters before we sign off. But a lot of those players today that are out on the tour for the first year or two could withstand that great pressure to win the green jacket, which again, that was very, very rare. Horton Smith won it in his first attempt in 34, Sarajan in 35, because he didn't play in the first event in 34. He was out of the country doing an exhibition. And then the next first time winner was Fuzzy Zeller in 1979. So it's very difficult, but now I think it's changed to where a young player could withstand the pressure and win it.
You know, you mentioned Fuzzy Zeller. I mentioned on the last episode that we recorded, the intro episode, my mom got to meet Fuzzy Zeller when she was going to the Masters. She met him a couple of times, actually. He is one of the winners whose autograph we have, along with, I think we have Fred Couples' autograph as well. And we have Nick Faldo's and a couple other players who weren't winners, but we only have like three winners' autographs. I'm curious to know who are some of the big name winners that you have of like the autographs that you do have?
Well, I have a master scorecard that has close to 40 signatures of the winners that I've collected myself. When I go to the tournament, now they've changed it a little bit as far as how you can get autographs. Back when I were going in the 90s, it was pretty easy to, the players were really accessible to do that. And
right.
the it's changed when they built the new range. I'll make it 5 or 6 years ago. I'm not sure exactly when the new range came in, maybe longer, but they've had certain areas that are just for autographs. But
now you have to be like a kid to get an autograph, pretty
that's
much.
Right, exactly. No, I act like a kid when I'm there, but that doesn't count. Mentally, I probably am a kid, but physically, I don't pass on that test. But the players' autographs that I really cherish on my card are obviously the ones that really contributed in my mind to the history of that great tournament. I have Sam Snead, Byron wow. Nelson, Gene Sarazen, also the 1946 winner that we talked about, Herman Kaiser, that again was from Springfield, Arnie, Jack. And when Arnie signed my card, he was actually signing in where the old driving range was. He was signing on the opposite side I was standing on. And a gentleman next to me yelled, "Arnie, can you sign my poster?" And Arnie looked at it, and it was a big poster of Tiger, Jack, and Arnie. And he walked completely over and signed the guy's poster. And I was standing next to him. I said, "Could you sign my card, Mr. Baum?" And he did. And then he went back the opposite side. So it was quite a thrill, even as an adult, to have somebody like Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus. I met him at a function and had him sign it. So it means a lot to me. And people will say, "What's it worth?" And it's priceless to me because it's not for sale. I mean, right. It's not something that I would be interested in selling because I got the autographs and that's special.
That's do you have it? Do you mind if we see it?
It'd be a good time to show it. Tell me that
yeah.
is the signal.
Wow.
And we're about full on that side of it. So I've got
I see Tom Watson at the top there too. Yeah. Right.
Yep. Tom Watson, Ben Crenshaw, Tommy Aaron, Fuzzy. You know, Fuzzy always signs in red.
Yeah.
So you can always pick his out. But right in the middle of it is the Jack and Arnie signature. And those things mean a lot to me. How I even got involved in the Masters being my favorite tournament. I grew up in a real small town in Oklahoma, 9-hole golf course, no golf pro, no driving range. The greens were about the size of the hood of your car. And we didn't have a golf pro or any of that. But a friend of my dad's went to the 1969 Masters, the George Archer one, and he brought back the yellow badge and gave it to me.
Hmm.
So I pinned that on my golf cap for years. So I kind of started that love affair with Augusta National and the golf course based on Bob Sibling giving me that Masters badge after the tournament was over. And I think that's why I've gone in that direction to collect a lot of the badges as well.
You know, Ed, you know, obviously you have this insane collection and, you know, you started this love with this Masters tournament so long ago. You know, one of the questions that we like to ask everyone who is coming onto this Memoirs from Magnolia Lane miniseries that we're doing is what makes the Masters a tradition unlike any other for you? You know, is it just the fact that you've been going for so long, or is it, you know, is there more to it than that? You know, or is it just the fact that you started this collection and you want to keep doing it? You know, what is it about the tradition that kind of drew you in?
Is this podcast about 4 days long? Because it may take to tell you what it means to me. You know, I love golf. I've been involved in golf since I was 12 years old. It's my job. It's my hobby. I love the sport and what all it means. But I guess to answer the question about Augusta National, it's kind of weird to say this, but I think you and I are masters in law. If we checked our DNA, I think we're related somewhere as masters in law. I think a lot of it is it feels like home to me when I'm there. It feels like when I go and step on those grounds that I am where I should be, where I belong. And I can't describe it, but I love the history of it. I love what Bobby Jones stood for, and I love what he's done with the tournament. It's not just the tournament. It is the world's greatest tournament. There's maybe tournaments that a few of the players would rather win, but no tournament is run better than the Masters. And I love how they control the patrons. There's no, "You're the man, get in the hole on every shot," even when somebody's teeing off 450 yards and somebody else get in the hole. There's none of that going on. There's not an excessive amount of alcohol being consume there, because everybody relishes the fact they're on hallowed grounds. And when I walk the course, I feel like I'm walking in history. And I am walking in history because of what all history has happened before us. And again, I could go on and on, but it feels like if you're a golfer, you end up at Augusta. And I think that's the way most of us feel.
Yeah. You know, I mentioned this on the last episode. The first golf tournament I ever went to was the Masters tournament. The first golf tournament that I ever, like, that was the first tournament I ever went to for many, many, many years. You know, I grew up going to that tournament, and, you know, it wasn't until, you know, I was 7 years old for my introduction to that tournament. And, you know, exactly like you were saying, I had never, I think the first tournament I went to that wasn't the Masters was, I think we went to the Players or something. But I was like well out of college. And so I was fully expecting, like, I was floored that I could take my phone in, you know. I was like, you can take your phone in here, you know? And like, I was floored to see people wearing jeans because again, that I was expecting people to be dressed to the nines, you know, cause they are at the Masters. And like you were saying, people yelling mashed potatoes off the tee. I was shocked because not that tournament wasn't ran well, because it was, but I was flabbergasted. And, you know, I think we went to, and like you were saying, how well the tournament at the Masters is run and how nice the course is set up. I remember going to the bathroom and I was like, a porta potty? Like, are you kidding me? Because I was so used to growing up at the Masters, where the bathrooms even are the most immaculate. And people joke about it whenever they go for the first time. And they're like, I was not expecting the bathrooms even to be like as incredible as they are. But it's true. Even the bathrooms at the Masters are better than any other, you know, which.
And they have attendance in the bathroom as well, which is unheard of. And the concessions, I mean, not only are they reasonably priced, the speed that you can go through it and get your pimento cheese sandwich and your drink and whatever, and get back to watching the golf, the whole experience takes less than just a few minutes. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, Bobby Jones and Clifford Roberts were geniuses in so many ways. And one of them was, we want our patrons to come to watch golf, not gouge them nickel and dime every time they turn around, or try to make the most of what they can. Look at the parking situation there. It's free. You can't go to any other major championship and you have free parking right outside the gate and have the shuttle come pick you up and bring you in if you're disabled. Again, the spectator guides are free. The pairing sheets are free. The way it moves through the merchandise area when you want to buy souvenirs, the line's long, but it moves, as you well know, and you're not going to spend more than 20 minutes waiting to get into the building, and could spend 4 hours or 10 hours in there looking at everything. Yeah. It's just incredible how they do it, and they do a fantastic job.
Yeah, and I mean, even some of the things that they've introduced over the years, I know when I was growing up, they didn't have the pictures in front of the clubhouse. And now that is something that they have. You know, I wish that they did, because, you know, growing up, when I went with my grandfather all the time, I wish that I had had a picture with him, you know, because we only went on tournament days and you didn't get to take a camera. And so I don't have a picture with me and my grandfather at the tournament, because, you know, once they did start doing those clubhouse pictures, my grandpa was the type of person, he's like, I'm not standing in line for a picture. We've been here a million years, you know. He doesn't need a picture to remember it. But, you know, now that is something that they do, that patrons who, you know, whether it's their first time, whether it's the only time that they get to go, that's something that they get to keep as a keepsake and prove, hey, I've been here, you know, and those are some special things that they're starting to introduce. Even last year with COVID, where they did the online store and the Taste of the Masters, being able to do some of those type of things is such a unique experience from any other tournament. And the way that you can watch the tournament too online is so drastically different from every other tournament. So yeah, that's definitely something that makes it special, you know. And I know we talked a little bit about your collection, and we saw your scorecard with all of the signatures. I'd love to see some more of the collection. We talked about your collection of Masters badges, but I know that you've got some more stuff. I know you also mentioned, and we actually didn't talk about this, but I know you told me this, you are writing a book about Horton Smith, as well as a trivia book about the Masters.
Yeah, it should be out probably in the next 30 days. We're shooting to get it out, hopefully by the 1st of April for the Masters, but it may be a week or two after. And, you know, the thing about Horton Smith, and I'm not going to bore you with all the details about it, but Horton Smith was a very unique individual from the standpoint he was probably the first professional golfer that went to college. That people didn't go to college back then that wanted to play golf and had that kind of ability. He did attend the local college here, him and his brother in Springfield. And he became, like I said earlier, a boy wonder and won all these tournaments. He's still the youngest Ryder Cup player in the history of the Ryder Cup. He was on the team when he was 21 years old.
Wow.
And yeah. And again, we talked about how many tournaments he won. He ended up winning 33. He was president of the PGA of America for 2 years, which is what their term is. You don't see any other Masters champion becoming president of the PGA of America. He was that. He was a head professional in Detroit at his club for over 25 years. So there was a lot of history that had never been, we'll say, examined or explored. And I got into this and just found more and more interesting facts about it, about Horton Smith. And then to another tie-in on the book, We'll give you a little trivia question here, Nikki. So, it's okay. And on the cover of the book, we have 284 Masters trivia or 284 Masters facts. And I'll give you a hint here. It has to do with Horton. Can you guess why the number was 284 Masters trivia that we put in the book?
Was that his? Like a score for, okay, the year he won. Okay. Okay.
When he won the Friday, you could do it. I knew okay. my mother-in-law sister could do it.
You made me nervous there for a second.
You did. I was going to give you a hint if you stuttered, but you nailed it. The when he won the tournament 1934, his total strokes for the 4 days was 284. So I thought it would be cool to do 284 Masters facts or trivia. And I'll tell you one before we look at the collection, if it's okay.
Yeah.
In 1959, Jack Nicklaus played in his very first Masters as an amateur. Okay. There's a couple of interesting facts. I'll throw another one about that. His mother, his dad, his Barbara, who was his girlfriend at the time, and sister all came to the tournament. Okay. His mother came in 1959 when Jack was an amateur. She never returned back to it until 1986 Masters.
What?
Was the first year she came back after being there for the first
time. Isn't really? That's insane. Wow.
Jack Nicklaus played in the Masters in 1959 as an amateur. Missed the cut. He played with a McGregor Isle-O-Matic 3-wood. He had this McGregor Isle-O-Matic 3-wood in his bag. He had kept that in his bag for 38 years. So when he won the 1986 Masters, he had the same 3-wood that he brought to Augusta in 1959 as an amateur.
Wow. And that was the next time that his mom came to Augusta.
Yes. 59 wow. when he first came and then 86 when he won. And
wow.
I believe I'd have to look the date up. It's about in 66, 65 during a practice round. Jack lost his wedding ring on the grounds of Augusta National playing a practice round.
I didn't know that. Wow.
After he lost his ring and told the Masters people about it, after the practice round, a bunch of the members and Jack went out and walked the whole golf course where he had been. It was never found.
Someone has found that ring. You know that. And yes, somebody yes. knows that small piece of trivia and is holding on to that ring somewhere and just keeping their mouth shut about it.
So there's a lot of those types of facts. You might call them meaningless, but if you're a Masters
those
junkie,
aren't meaningless facts. Those are very interesting. Yeah.
That's why we're masters in law. But that's what's in the book. And I put that in the book because there's going to be a lot of people that would look at this and think, Horton Smith, I'm not crazy about him. I don't know much. But to get the Masters facts, it kind of updates it. It makes it more where a current Masters fan would want to thumb through the book or purchase the book to look at these things. So
wow, that's very interesting. I'm excited to read it. Where can we find the book once it does come out?
Well, they can contact me right now. I'm not sure exactly where it's going to be, but we'll give your contact numbers if you want to do that and go from there. You want to take a look at some of the collection?
Yes. Let's take a look.
Okay. This is when we built this house, me and my wife, 20 some years ago, we have a what we call an upstairs bonus room. And when we did the bonus room, Nikki, we had the carpet put in green. We had the ceiling.
Of course.
We have the ceiling painted blue with clouds in it. And we have two cups that were mounted in the floor where we can put a flag in the room, just like a cup on the green. So we had all that installed when we built the
I see the clouds. House. That's nice.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not sure exactly how well you're going to see. If you see something that you want to ask me about, here is the Bobby Jones. We have a Bobby Jones autographed book. His book, Golf is My Game, a plate from the 1997 Masters. Am I doing okay on the pictures?
Yeah, yeah, we can see. Yeah, I see the book, I see the plate. 97, that's an important year for Tiger Woods fans.
That's exactly right. This was the copy of Golf Magazine, Golf Digest, that came out in the 50s. And you can see it's kind of a small magazine compared to what it is today. This is a Masters watch. This is the man himself. I'll see if we can get it to where.
Up, there we go. Yep. Oh, it's upside down, but we see it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll do it this way then. Sorry, Nikki.
There we go. No, you're okay. There we go. Oh, I see that. I recognize that signature anywhere.
The Tiger Woods autograph card. This is a replica of the very first program that the Masters did a program in 1934 and 1935, and then they didn't do another program until 1990. This is a replica of the first one that they sold in the pro shop in the 80s, is what.
Now they're still doing the programs now, right? You can actually buy at Barnes and Noble and pretty much any drugstore in Augusta within a 50-mile radius of Augusta.
Yeah. And every time I go into Barnes and Noble. Yep, that's right. And we in Springfield, they sell them because the clerks say, uh-oh, must be Masters time. Here comes Rick. So they know. This is a set of clubs that Bob Kalecki, that was the head pro with Dave Spencer for over 30 years. This is his clubs. And what's cool about it, it's got his name on them. And it also has the Masters logo. Not as good as your tattoo, but close.
That's still pretty cool.
And I'll tell you a real quick story. I talked to Bob Kalecki about the clubs, and he played Wilson clubs when Clifford Roberts hired him as the head professional. And after he was hired, Bobby Jones asked Bob, he said, Bob, I'm on the advisory board for Spalding. Would you mind switching clubs and play Spalding? Hmm. Bob said, not a problem, Mr. Jones. And he started playing Spalding the rest of his life. Those are early 70s. And again, it's got the Augusta logo on it with his name stamped on the club. So it's pretty cool. This, and again, I'm not sure how I'm doing with the viewing, Nikki.
A little sideways, but we can see. Not. Yeah.
A Horton Smith staff bag. Go ahead. Can you tell it?
Yeah, I can see the staff bag. Mm-hmm. I see all the annuals behind you on the shelf too. And
these are the annuals that they started coming with in about 1977, and they still do it every year. We have every annual. This, if you can see this, Nikki, mm-hmm. I don't know if you can read on there. It says Clifford Roberts personal hat, Augusta National. That was owned by Cliff Roberts, that hat. And how do you know that? Inside the band, it says especially made for Clifford Roberts, Augusta National on the inside.
Man, and I thought my little Masters collection of flags here was impressive, but man, that is quite the collection you have there. I don't even want to know how long it took you to get half of these things, and you know, I'm guessing are most of these things collected from the tournament? Are you collecting these things from other golf fans? Are you not wanting to give away your secrets?
Anybody that has Masters memorabilia, I've either traded or bought. Some of them are auction items. This here, I don't know if you can see it. Can you see that? That is Horton Smith's typewriter.
Angle down just a little bit. Angle down just a little bit. And we can
on that typewriter. That way or the?
Angle down just a little bit, and I think we can see it. And then to the left, or I guess it's to your right. Right now, we're seeing the bag. Oh, I see the book. Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Probably too fast, but there
you go.
See it?
Yep. Yeah, we see the book. Mm-hmm.
And that book's autographed by Horton Smith. This is his typewriter that he wrote the book on. And on the back of it, it has a name label, and it's got Horton Smith, the Bonaire Hotel in Augusta, Georgia. Horton Smith stayed a lot at the Bonaire, which a lot of players did back in the early days of the Masters. And Horton also married a lady that's grandfather started the Singer Sewing Machine Company and was a multi-millionaire. He lost all of his money in the stock market.
Oh, no.
That's what he was planning on giving Bobby Jones the $70,000 to buy the property. And because of the stock market, he couldn't do it. So he only gave him, I believe, $10,000 or $15,000. His name was Alfred Bourne. That was Horton Smith's father-in-law. And they had, he married Barbara Bourne, Alfred's daughter. They had one child that was killed in the 80s in a plane crash. But anyway, it's kind of fascinating story that Horton's wife, Horton's father-in-law was really the vice president of Augusta National under Cliff Roberts.
Wow. Wow. So it's a very small golf world, I guess. And everything ties back together.
Yes.
Well, it's very obvious that you have a unique passion for this tournament and this golf course. And obviously all tied together from where you live and from your connection to Horton. And like you said, everyone who has this kind of unique passion is, I guess, what was the term you use? Masters in law?
Yeah.
I like that term.
You know, Nikki, it all comes from your heart. It isn't when you were kind of kidding, saying your collection's small. Your collection's great because it's important to you. And the size of the collection does not mean anything. It doesn't mean that I'm more of a fan or you're more of a fan. As long as you have that love and compassion for the tournament, it doesn't matter if you don't collect anything, but you just look till the days are coming up where you can watch the tournament. Those are as big a Master fans as you and I.
That's 100% true. You are absolutely right. You don't have to have a single thing collected you can still be just as big of a fan. That is such a great point. And I hope that there are listeners out there who take that to heart too, because I know there are listeners out there who have probably never been to the tournament and who probably never don't have a Masters flag or a Masters badge or definitely don't have the Masters logo tattooed on their body either, but that does not mean that they are not just as big of fans of the tournament as you and I are, or fans of Tiger Woods, or Horton Smith, or other Masters winners. So that's a very excellent point and a good point to end on too. Again, I just want to thank you so much for being here and for joining us. We will link your information in the episode notes so that if people are interested in the book, they can contact you. I know I'm very excited to get it once it comes out. Looking forward to it. And, we will hopefully talk to you soon as, the book comes out. And I just want to thank everyone for listening again. We will have, another episode coming to you soon, again with another Masters patron who is just as passionate as Rick and myself. You can follow us on social media at Golf Unfiltered. You can follow myself at Nikki Dunnigan, NikkiDunnagan. And as always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you can reach Adam at Golf Unfiltered. If you have any concerns, probably reach Adam. Don't reach me. joking a little bit. But or you can also reach me at Nikki@golfunfiltered.com. And we will see you again soon for another episode of Memoirs from Magnolia Lane. Cheers.